Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Meet the Candidates. I'm your host, Jonathan Grabowski. Joining me on the show today is a candidate running for the Republican nomination for Attorney General, and it's Dan Shores. Dan, thanks for coming on the show today.
Jonathan, thank you so much for having me today.
Great. So we're going to get into your background, then we're going to talk about the issues, you know, about the role of the Attorney General and the race itself. So for those who don't know you from the Marshfield area, who is Dan Shores?
I am from Massachusetts originally. I grew up on the South Shore. I grew up in Weymouth and Carver. And I'm from a blue-collar family from the South Shore, mostly in Carver, where I grew up. I put myself through both college and law school. Mm-hmm. I'm a graduate of the Georgetown University Law Center in Washington, D.C. I was a member of the Law Review at Georgetown, and I was also a member of the editorial board of the Law Review at Georgetown. And I was recruited from law school to work in private practice down in D.C. And I worked in a number of two firms as a litigator. Mm-hmm. I worked in high stakes litigation cases, federal cases, throughout the United States District Courts, mm-hmm. Some appellate courts. I spent about 13 years in D.C. I got a great experience. I'm a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. I had a wonderful experience, and I came back home not that long ago in 2014, and I ran for the United States Congress in the 9th Congressional District.
We'll get back to that now. So you're a practicing attorney down here on the South Shore?
That's correct. I fell short in the primary. Mm-hmm. We may get into that. But I like to say I won the race because I met my wife, Lindsay, during the campaign. We live in Hingham. We moved to Hingham recently, last year. And I founded a law practice following the congressional race. And we have offices in Boston and down in D.C. There are two offices of the firm. It's called Shores and Oliver PC. Mm-hmm. Again, an office in Boston and in D.C.
And the area of practice that firm is?
Is technology, intellectual property, law.
You mentioned the 2014 congressional race, and as we were talking before the show, we had actually met previously during that race. I actually interviewed you for a few moments doing some work for WATD. So what'd you learn from that whole process of running?
Well, first of all, I learned that I loved every minute of campaigning. I love fighting for what's right. I love speaking in front of people. I love all the activity. I love people in general, and I love the people of Massachusetts, and certainly, and especially those from where I grew up. And so it was an incredible experience. I felt energized as the campaign went on. I had noticed that some of my primary opponents were getting tired, and I felt myself gaining momentum and getting energy from what I was doing. So certainly, I learned that I enjoyed it. And I learned a lot of the blocking and tackling that goes into campaigning, how important fundraising is, those types of things. And so it was a great experience, a great learning experience, a very positive experience. And it also confirmed my beliefs, solidified what I believe in. I had a consistent message throughout the campaign. And I think as those who watched me during the congressional race, and now they watch me run for Attorney General, they can recognize that I'm very consistent with my positions, and I've been consistent that way even before I ran throughout my whole life. I've really had a firm belief in this country and where it should be going.
Now let's jump to today. So why are you running for Attorney General? Why this seat?
Okay, so I think it's important first to understand what does the Attorney General's office do. The AG's office takes in about $50 million a year of taxpayer money. And it goes into the Attorney General's office, and that instrumentality is designed to enforce our laws to protect our people. The head of that office is the Attorney General. And so the instrumentality is there to, again, to enforce our laws right here in Massachusetts, to protect our people. Unfortunately, the present Attorney General is not doing her job in that role. The present Attorney General is using the Office of Attorney General, using the taxpayer dollars that we're putting in there, using it to advance politics. This is most demonstrable with respect to her over 40 lawsuits or other legal actions against the Trump administration. Most of them, I'd argue, are politically motivated lawsuits that are designed to advance a hyper-left-wing agenda, mm-hmm. and that's politics, okay? But when you look at the AG's office, the AG's office is supposed to be administer justice without regard mm-hmm. to politics. The law and politics do not mix. That's what that office is supposed to be, and so I'm running for Attorney General to get politics out of the office of Attorney General and to bring it back to its true purpose, again, enforcing our laws to protect our people. Essentially, John, I'm a reform candidate. Mm-hmm. Reform the Office of Attorney General and bring it back to where it's supposed to be without regard to politics. And that means, I know I'm running as a Republican, and mm-hmm. people ask me, well, you're a Republican, you're a Reagan Republican. Doesn't that mean that it's by nature a political position? I have no secret about what I believe and the fundamentals that I believe in and what our country and our Commonwealth is supposed to be. But I've assured the voters, and I mean it, when I'm sitting in that office and I take the oath of office as Attorney General and I'm doing the job on behalf of the people of Massachusetts, it won't make any difference to me. Politics will make no difference to me. And if you're being investigated for public corruption, for mm-hmm. example, it won't make any difference to me whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, an independent. I will be there to do my job and do the job for the people of Massachusetts. And I'm the only candidate in this race that's saying that. That's what we need. I would be the first Republican Attorney General to serve in Massachusetts in 50 years. Wow. The last Republican Attorney General was Elliot Richardson, and that was about 50 years ago that he served. And so I think our taxpayers deserve a change, deserve something different, something new, and that's what I'm here to provide.
I want to get into some of the issues or topics of the Attorney General's office in the race. We've talked about reform. And one of the things I've learned throughout this process is that the AG plays a large role in the energy market. What would you do differently on that front?
Well, I think there's a record that's been made by this Attorney General. And by the way, this is the first office that she's held, the first public office that she's held. And so she's created a record over the last 3.5 years. One of the decisions that she made early on is to stand against natural gas pipelines. The rationale that this Attorney General gave for standing against natural gas pipelines was her reliance on a study. There was a particular study that said Massachusetts will not need to get energy from any outside sources. And that was the reliance. And I think actually it was one of her, another political decision mm-hmm. To satisfy those in her party that don't want to see any natural gas pipelines because of their obsession with the global warming, their belief in the global warming phenomenon. So that was an action that she took and decided that we don't need natural gas pipelines. Mm-hmm. Well, fast forward to 2017, this past winter. We had a cold snap. It was, you recall, it was about two or three weeks long. Yeah. The harbor froze up, the ferry from Hingham froze up. We couldn't move anywhere, and we needed more energy. So at that point, it proved that the Attorney General's judgment was flawed, because here we were in a situation where we needed more energy. Otherwise, and I've spoken with experts about this, we were gonna be subject to rolling blackouts. Can you imagine rolling blackouts in the middle of the winter? So what we had to do is we had to purchase fuel from overseas. And the Boston Globe wrote an article about this. Some of that fuel came from companies that were majority owned by Russia. And so here we are in Massachusetts with all this hype on the national stage mm-hmm. relating to Russia and its and how bad Russia is. And based on the judgment, the flawed judgment of this Attorney General, we were forced to purchase fuel from yeah. Russia. And by the way, these same experts have told me that our rates will increase this winter. So because of the poor judgment of the sitting Attorney General, our rates are gonna increase this year. I take a much different approach to it. I am an environmentalist, so I do believe in renewables. I do believe that's where we need to go. But I also have common sense, and I think we need to have natural gas pipelines here in Massachusetts. So I do support that as a bridge to the future, as a bridge to get to the renewables. But between now and that time, we have to use common sense. And that's pretty much what I will apply across the board, in particular with respect to energy, if I'm elected.
Okay. On to another hot button issue, immigration. Where do you stand on Massachusetts being a sanctuary state, or cities and towns in Massachusetts being sanctuary cities or towns?
I am against Massachusetts becoming a sanctuary state. I am against Massachusetts's cities or towns becoming sanctuary cities or towns for the very simple reason that those regimes are against the law. When you take your oath of office as attorney general, as the chief lawyer and chief law enforcement official in Massachusetts, you take an oath to uphold the law, and both Massachusetts under the Massachusetts Constitution and also the federal Constitution. So the fact that our present attorney general believes or supports an illegal regime, I think, is a violation, quite frankly, of our oath of office. So as attorney general, I don't get to, I will call balls and strikes as attorney general. I will not make decisions based on some political viewpoint. And I think that's a very key distinction between myself and the incumbent. And I think it's important for voters to know that they have a choice, they have an option to have an attorney general that will do the job when elected.
A topic that we bring up with every candidate, no matter it's someone running for selectman all the way to state representatives to the attorney general's office, is the opioid epidemic. How can we win this battle?
We will win this battle. We can win this battle, and we will win this battle. I think it's it requires a tremendous amount of leadership. It requires a tremendous amount of commitment and hard work on the part of multiple stakeholders in our government. First of all, I have a three-part approach to this problem. Number one is education, which translates to prevention. Mm-hmm. With these drugs, it's one strike and you're out. One strike and you're addicted, or one strike and you're dead. Your life is affected for eternity, as well as your family and friends. And I don't think anyone in this Commonwealth has not been affected by this scourge in one way or another. Mm-hmm. It crosses socioeconomic boundaries. When I grew up, one of the taboo things or the wrong thing to do was to go to an underage keg party or an underage party or at someone's house. Yeah. But you can live to tell about it the next day. But again, it's such an extreme chemical that's out there, poison that's out there, that our kids need to know, do not open that door to hell in the first place. Right. And so we need to be much more aggressive than we have been in getting into our school systems and educating the kids. Don't open that door. There are other options for you in life. Because once they do, it's over. And then you fall into the, then we fall into the trap. And we have a culture of people who are subjected to that poison. So we need to be much more aggressive. I understand there are some programs we're into our schools. Mm-hmm. As the next attorney general, I will ramp up that activity to get into our schools for prevention, the most important thing. So the AG's office does have a role to play there.
Okay.
That's point one of three.
Point one.
Number two is relates to treatment and healthcare services. And that's, if you fall into that trap in the first place, we need to do everything within our power to get the folks back up on their feet. Now, the Attorney General's office is not a healthcare provider, but what the Attorney General's office can do is direct traffic and bring people who come to the office and direct them to where they need to go in terms of services. And then those services are administered through the state of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and also affiliated nonprofit organizations throughout the Commonwealth. And there are a lot of resources out there for folks, and that's something that is important to solve the problem. Not so much a heavy from the AG's perspective, but that will solve the problem. Mm-hmm. But the final, the third, and the most important piece of this to win the opioid battle is law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And that's in the central purview of the Office of Attorney General. We need to be tough on crime. We need to crack down on the drug dealers, the drug traffickers, those who profit, who make money from putting that poison onto our streets. Mm-hmm. We need to crack down on those folks with the full force and weight of the law. Our current Attorney General, A.G. Healy, is weak on crime. This attorney general supported the the criminal justice bill that came through and eliminated mandatory minimum sentences for drug traffickers, many of them. This attorney general has stated in the letter in 2017 that she supports a, quote, safety valve for drug dealers to bypass minimum mandatory sentences when sitting before a judge. So this attorney general, who's supposed to be our chief lawyer in the in a scourge in this opioid epidemic, our chief lawyer is weak on crime, sympathizes with drug dealers, and that's the wrong message to send. I don't sympathize with drug dealers. I don't sympathize with people who put poison into our streets, hurt our people, kill our people. I sympathize with the working families in Massachusetts that pay the taxes, that do the right thing, that go to the work every single day and want to see their taxpayer dollars keep them safe in their homes, keep their kids, keep the drugs off the streets, keep it away from their kids. That's what I believe in, and that's a stark contrast between myself and the sitting attorney general. So it's a rather long answer. It's a big problem. But I think if we're all doing what we can and giving our maximum effort, we can get past this. We will get past this crisis.
Thank you. Something else that's a big topic is public corruption. Current AG hasn't brought forward a single major corruption case. Why is that? I'm sure there's corruption out there and she hasn't brought it forward. Why?
Well, I say in the campaign trail, you know, are we led to assume that Massachusetts is so clean and uncorrupt as the sitting attorney general appears to believe? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
And so we have to be, if I'm elected as the next attorney general, public corruption will be a centerpiece of the administration of justice in Massachusetts. Currently, the attorney general's office, I said there's $50 million that gets put in there. The attorney general oversees about 200 lawyers in the office. There's staff, there's lawyers the attorneys, the assistant AGs, they're tasked with working on different matters. And the way the office is currently structured is there are a number of bureaus. So it's like divisions or departments under the attorney general's office. For example, the criminal bureau, there's the energy and environmental bureau, and that's how it's currently structured. There are a number of other bureaus. Mm-hmm. What my intention is, if I'm elected, is to reshape the AG's office, reorganize it, and create, and without needing more taxpayer dollars, we're not talking about a new government program here, we're talking about reshaping and making the office more focused and efficient. Okay. And I want to form a Bureau of Public Integrity underneath the Attorney General's office, and the Bureau of Public Integrity will be responsible for investigating, taking incredible allegations of public corruption, investigating those allegations, and then if there are serious allegations that warrant a further investigation or prosecution, then we prosecute those individuals with the full force and weight of the law. We've seen a number of scandals come through. We've seen the Rosenberg scandal came through.
I was just thinking that
the attorney general was hands off with the conduct of Senator Stan Rosenberg. Right. I don't know why. I'm not in the mind of the sitting attorney general, but I do know what the record and what the conduct was on behalf of the attorney general, and she didn't investigate Senator Rosenberg. The state police, this attorney general attempted to push that case off to the governor. The governor did his job, looked into it as far as his purview was concerned, and then sent it back to the attorney general, who was supposed to conduct a criminal investigation. And while we heard comments that there would be an investigation, we haven't heard anything about that. Mm-hmm. So anything that sticks to the attorney general's office, this attorney general just tells the public, investigations are ongoing, nothing to see here, we'll let you know what the story is, and you never hear anything about it.
It eventually disappears.
And I think there's a reason for that. There's a number of reasons for that. And one of them is perhaps this attorney general is too busy using taxpayer dollars to sue the White House and enhance her national profile and to set herself up for another office. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wrong. I don't care what party you're affiliated with, that's wrong. The hard-earned taxpayer dollars go into that AG's office. We need to use those funds to help the people right here in Massachusetts. For every lawsuit that this attorney general files against the Trump administration, guess what? Those are lawyers that are attached to that. Those are resources mm-hmm. that are directed to that case. And that's one more opioid dealer that goes free. That's one more public official that commits an act of corruption and gets away with it. Or that's one more senior that's defrauded from some phony phone scheme. Mm-hmm. And so we really have a big problem here. I think this attorney general believes that she's raised a lot of money. She probably is very confident in her chances this fall. Well, I have another message for her, and I would say to her that what she's doing is wrong. I think she will see, any common sense mm-hmm. person can see that. My message, my product is much better for the people of Massachusetts, and so I've been working very hard to try to appeal and get the message out to the voters, mm-hmm. and I think our product is much better for the people of Massachusetts, and I'm looking for some strong support in the general election.
Right. Second Amendment, you've promised to revoke the current AG's rifle ban. Why is that?
Well, if you look at the, okay, so for those that can clear through the media, the cloud that's created, and what happened was in 2016, this attorney general issued a guidance from her office, where essentially what she did was she redefined what copies and duplicates of certain assault weapons were. The assault weapons statute that we have here in Massachusetts is verbatim from the federal assault weapons ban legislation was passed in the 90s and sunsetted in 2004, 2005. And so Massachusetts kept the assault weapons ban legislation on the books. What this attorney general did was redefine what copies and duplicates were and really issue her own set of legislation. It was really legislation. Okay. And it was very poor legislation because it's very ambiguous. I think the people who own firearms in Massachusetts, I'm a gun owner myself. I have a license to carry. I have a firearm in my home for self-defense, mm-hmm. primarily, mm-hmm. Which is my constitutional right, as it is yours and as was established in the Heller decision.
Right.
I think it was 2008 and the 2000s. That is a fundamental right that we have. Well, this attorney general decided to issue this guidance. But she did so, this is what was most troubling about that.
Okay.
It was done without consultation with the legislature, without consultation with the governor. Now, we live in a republic, which means that we need to have laws passed by the legislature and approved by the governor. She bypassed that. This attorney general bypassed that. And that's really very concerning. And when that happened, there was significant pushback from the legislature, including high-ranking Democrat legislatures that said, it's not your job to make the law. Your job is to enforce the law. It's our job to make the law and your job to enforce the law. I believe that. Clearly this attorney general did not believe that. And by the way, Jonathan, this was done during the heat of the presidential campaign, during a period, she announced this, during the time when Hillary Clinton was up visiting and fundraising in Massachusetts. And so I think if you look at the record, this isn't personal. This is objective as to what the record is.
Right.
The steps and the actions taken by this attorney general are politically motivated, politics. Mm-hmm. And again, my message and my approach is to make decisions relating to the law, not relating to politics. I want to get politics out of the AG's office. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I just drawing another distinction with the sitting attorney general and telling the voters as to what I will provide.
Okay. Something you touched on a little earlier was cybersecurity. How will you work to ensure that our personal information is protected?
Well, I think that's another multidisciplinary approach or a multifaceted approach. We are fortunate to live in Massachusetts, and we are fortunate to live in the vicinity in Boston with some of the best technical colleges in the world. Mm-hmm. I have a undergraduate degree in engineering, mechanical engineering. I have a lot of experience with intellectual property matters and mm-hmm. different tech companies and so forth. And so I have a sort of the grounding to look at and address this type of problem. There's really a couple of areas. One is protecting our governmental institutions, mm-hmm. and also protecting consumer rights and consumer data. Okay. And so it's really a multidisciplinary approach that requires ensuring that each institution has a program, has a plan mm-hmm. in place that where they assess their systems, they analyze their information technology systems, they identify where there are vulnerabilities, and they make corrections in consultation with experts to enhance their abilities. And then we also want the large companies, their abilities to ward off a cyber attack. We also want any of the companies that are handle consumer data, that are responsible right. for our citizens' private information, that they absolutely comply with the regulations in terms of making sure that our information is safe, because that's certainly in the core of the public interest. And so I plan to be aggressive in that front to face this threat of the 21st century. And I plan to do a much better job than the sitting attorney. I think the sitting attorney general has checked the boxes, has had some meetings and has talked about it. Right. And fortunately, I haven't seen any major cyber attack in the recent past. And so, but that the whole thing about cyber is about prevention. Mm-hmm. And so what I will bring to the table is someone with the background that can actually weigh in and solve that problem.
You've referred to yourself as a constitutional conservative. What does that mean?
So what that means is that I understand, first of all, fully understand constitutional law. I studied it at Georgetown. There are a number of seminars that I took at Georgetown and wrote quite a bit on it. It's something that I've been intellectually curious about and interested about pretty much my entire legal career, and even before that, that was one of the things that drew me to law school. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a and it also explains why I am a Republican. Yeah. We live in a republic. Okay, we do not live in a democracy. We do not live in a where the will of the people on any given day rules. Mm-hmm. The framers, including our John Adams, and particularly our John Adams, who designed our Massachusetts Constitution, which, by the way, is the oldest functioning constitution in the world. He drafted that in 1700s mm-hmm. and put it in. Our federal constitution is based upon that, and it's based on a separation of powers. Mm-hmm. And that is designed to withstand the flourish and the desires and the passion, the heat of passion of the day. You look at the news one day, the whole country right. could be focused on one thing. Mm-hmm. You fast forward even a month later, it could be totally different. And so our republic is really formed so that it withstands those. And I believe in that. And that's really why I'm Republican. I think what we have right now is the Democrat Party is exactly what it is labeled as. And it thinks that democracy should be ruling mm-hmm. in our Commonwealth. And as a Republican, I believe that our republic should be ruling, because otherwise it risks our government dissolving. And so that's why I say I'm a constitutional conservative. And when I say I'm a constitutional conservative, it also means that, I believe in the separation of powers, mm-hmm. but it also means that I believe in the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
We have the Bill of Rights are a core aspect of our republic, and which means that we are able to pursue happiness. We are free from unwarranted intervention from right. the government. And so I believe in that whole thing. And so I think the word conservative and liberal sort of gets tossed around, but I believe in conserving and preserving our governmental institution so that it continues to serve us and protect it. And so.
We have a few minutes left here, so we've gone through a lot of kind of big, heavy subjects. We're going to have some fun.
Okay.
So what's something interesting that people may not know about you?
My wife and I own two adorable English bulldogs.
Okay. All right. If we were to take your phone, your iPod, whatever, what music would we find on it?
You'd find Pandora, which is mostly what I listen to. And there are a number of different channels. There's a great classical channel I listen to,
okay.
Dave Matthews Band.
Okay.
I have a movie themes station,
okay.
which I like to listen to when I write usually. So there's a variety of music on there.
And if people want to find out more about you, where can they go?
My website for the campaign is danshores.com. And through there, you can get links to the Facebook page and all that stuff. And everything's sort of laid out there, the issues. If you send a message, if a one of our citizens sends a message to us through the website, we will get back to you. It does come to our people, and we will get back to you. And so don't think you're sending it into the abyss. You will get responded to.
Great. Well, Dan, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I wish you the best of luck.
Appreciate it.
And that's all the time we have for Meet the Candidates. And until next time, make it a great day.